Warning, the following is not for entertainment purposes only. Any defamation of real persons, living or dead, is purely intentional. Copying, distribution, retransmission, or modification of information or materials on this program is without express prior written permission from anyone, ever. Unauthorized duplication and distribution may result in civil liberties through criminal enterprise. By any means necessary, please try this at home. Listener discretion is personal. Listen at your own risk.
You're listening to the second episode of Inconsiderate, the audio show that skips the general strike to just strike everyone in general. We'll start off with Nothing Matters News, move on to our new Inconsiderate Advice segment where Sunshine, the mind behind Toddlers and Tiaras piece from episode 1, answers your questions to the worst of her ability. We also visit with some morons at the May Day workers demonstration, we interview a Canadian band about their bullshit, Squee drops in again to tell us about his resistance to cool, and we finish off with I Don't Play That Victim Shit, a true story about someone's mom who fended off a stalker. Before we kick off, based on a story in the first episode where a mom falsely pointed out her son in security footage of a bank robbery, we asked listeners to answer, do mama snitches get mama stitches? Allie, a mother herself, answered, yes, mama snitches deserve mama stitches. Real mamas don't do you like that. A listener named Kyle played the show for his mom, and he said that she answered that it was wrong for his mom to turn him in just because the bank robber looked like him. He says, then I asked her if she thinks mama stitches get mama stitches, and she said yes. A listener going by Jack responded that probably best to question why snitches, motherly or otherwise, are required to beat down in the first place. Is it to discourage snitching? To teach a lesson? Simple revenge? Gratification? And is that the most effective way to accomplish the goals? I think it's pretty clear that this would vary from person to person and situation to situation. Of course, if it was my mama, that bitch is going down. An anonymous listener responded, mama snitches are still mamas. I'd never give my mama stitches, but then again, my mama would never be tricked by a silly mask into turning me in. What if your snitch mama was actually your daddy wearing a mask so that you'd kill your snitch mama? And the last answer from Diomira is, well, mama bear is supposed to protect her baby bear or else she gets her shit fucked up, right? It's basic instinct to react accordingly. And now we'll proceed by letting Nothing Matters News be introduced by this existentially angsty, drunken rendition of Bohemian Rhapsody that was sung on the way to jail in the back of a cop car.
I have done nothing wrong, and even the situation where you grab me has nothing to do with having been sort of intoxicated, as you proclaim. And I didn't say that I was intoxicated when you grabbed me, and I haven't. But it doesn't even matter. What it has to do with brotherhood of men on the planet Earth.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide. No escape from reality. Open your mind. Look up to the skies and see. I'm just a fool, I need no sympathy. Cause it's easy come, easy go. Little high, little anywhere the wind blows doesn't really matter to me. To me, bum 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 bum. Cause nothing really matters, anyone can see. Nothing really matters, no, nothing really matters. Nothing really matters, even the RCMP.
Every day we turn on the TV and there's more bad news. Another environmental catastrophe somewhere, or more starving refugees or innocent victims in war zones. And most of us are busy trying to make ends meet in our own lives, and we see these images and feel helpless to do anything. I think the deep shame we feel about that is paralyzing. It's certainly one of the reasons that we turn away.
When you stare into the news stares back. Caution! You're about to enter the No Future Zone. Nothing Matters News starts now, because nothing's news under the sun.
The first story we're bringing to you tonight is a rare case. In New York, a police officer did something good for the community.
A horrifying story from New York. Authorities say an on-duty police officer committed suicide Thursday night by shooting himself in the face. It's believed the officer, whose name has been withheld pending family notification, got into a heated argument over the phone with his girlfriend.
Oh, and I want to thank you for putting me under the added pressure of being the sole breadwinner now.
No, don't give a second thought as to who's going to pay the mortgage. We'll just leave it all up to Carolyn. You mean you're going to take care of everything now, Carolyn?
Yes, I don't mind. I really don't.
You mean everything? You don't mind having the sole responsibility?
He got out of his patrol car and he's on the phone with somebody, a police source said. He puts the gun in his mouth and fires.
With a gun barrel between your teeth, you speak only in vowels.
There's even more of an upside to this story as well. This is only one of four cop suicides that have happened in 2012 in New York already. It looks like this revolutionary cop-killing trend is catching on. Hey, at least somebody's doing it.
The officer was responding to a call with his partner about a series of car break-ins in the Hollis Hills neighborhood in Queens. His partner was in the home at the time and quickly rushed out after hearing the shot. Did he just shoot himself? The cop asked the stunned civilian.
I'm not usually inclined to believe liberals when they argue that there are good cops out there. But if some police officers have the good sense to off themselves, we can't say that they're all bad.
A neighbor told the Post, I heard one shot. The next thing, there were so many police officers. He was just laying there motionless. The New York Daily News reports his partner frantically radioed for help. The officer was taken to the Long Island Jewish Medical Center in the back of a police car where he died.
Officer, your motto was to protect and to serve, and I thank you for the service you have provided with your suicide. You are a hero and an inspiration to us all.
It's a celebration. Let's celebrate. There's a party going on right here. A dedication.
We all gotta hustle, so who can blame this guy for dressing up like his dead mother to collect and cash her post-mortem social security checks and other benefits?
Well, in a case of life imitating art, an American man has been busted impersonating his dead mother. This crook used the disguise to cash in on her welfare checks.
That's him in the red dress impersonating his mother, who died 6 years ago. In high heels and lipstick, he's pocketed more than $100,000 in pension and housing benefits. Parkin allegedly gave the funeral home a fake social security number, so his mother's death was never officially recorded.
Do you go out with friends?
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
Cops who held a press conference about this seem baffled and sound slightly interested in further investigation for makeup tips and how to walk in heels.
Investigators met someone dressed as a 77-year-old woman, complete with lipstick, painted nails, and of course the imposter is Thomas Parkin.
Thomas Harkin also has us scratching our heads, since while impersonating his mother, went to the police to file a fraud report on someone.
He continued to live in her million-dollar townhouse and even went to police, dressed as his mother, to file a fraud complaint against a man who bought the home at auction.
So, wait, like the last episode we asked, do impersonating dead mama snitches get impersonating dead mama stitches?
Thomas Parkin claims he's done nothing wrong because he's acting on his mother's advice, telling prosecutors that when she died, he held her body and her spirit went into him. That defense is unlikely to impress a jury.
Okay, now I have no idea what's going on. Who gets the stitches? Is it the spirit, the corpse, Thomas Harkin, Norman Bates? I give up. Just pass me the nail polish when my mom dies.
My mother there? But she's harmless. She's as harmless as one of those stuffed birds.
It's sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son. They'll put him away now, as I should have years ago. He was always bad. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
It's not as if she were a maniac, a raving thing. She just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes, haven't you?
A 92-year-old woman woman opened fire on the home and car of a 53-year-old ex-cop because he refused to give her a kiss. That's his story, anyway.
It's a crime fueled by a denied kiss.
Now a local 92-year-old woman is in police custody. Police say Helen Stollinger tried to force her neighbor to lock lips, and when he refused, she opened fire.
The woman is now in jail under a $15,000 bond. Deputies recovered her 350 semi-automatic pistol. Now, the object of her alleged affection is an ex-police officer.
Now, who really believes this guy didn't lead her on at all? An ex-cop wandering on the trailer park drunk, trying to shake off the psych issues from harassing minorities and planting evidence? After a few drinks, grandma might start to seem more and more tempting.
She's a stalker, basically what it is.
Investigators say she appeared to have the impression there was a relationship between her and Dwight Bettner. A neighbor and friend who didn't want to be identified agrees, but says Helen would never hurt anyone.
You know, she was upset with him because her boyfriend, she was thinking he was her boyfriend. And that's all I heard. That's all I know.
And where exactly did she get this impression? It seems like she may have gotten this impression from the backseat of his car.
Records show the 92-year-old Stoudinger came home, got her gun, and went back to shoot his car that he loved so much. That he loved so much.
92-year-old woman, she just wanted a kiss. And when her 50-something neighbor said no, well, she allegedly pulled out a gun and shot up his house. One bullet flew into the bedroom, three others hitting the outside, hit his car as well.
Well, she then went to her home, which is less than 500 feet away, retrieved a 380 semi-automatic weapon, and started popping off some shots. One bullet actually went into his beloved car.
If Granny could please pardon the phrase, the final nail in the coffin for the 53-year-old ex-cop leading this poor woman on is that she apparently made it through 92 years of life without a scratch on her criminal record, and definitely without randomly firing on objects of her affection.
Now, I gotta ask, has Helen been in trouble with your department before?
No, to the best of my knowledge, she has not. At 92 years old, she doesn't have a record with this agency.
She's probably getting a very long prison sentence, but at 92, at least it can't actually be that long. Lesson here is not to avoid kissing grandma, because old people need love too. It's that you can never, ever trust the motherfucking police.
You don't.
Oh, your dear old granny.
Hi, it's me again, here to brighten your day. Do you have a problem? Do you need advice? Do you want guidance? Congratulations, you are just as boring as every other idiot. Don't worry though, I'm Dr. Sunshine, and I will have the wonderful fucking task of reading through all the questions you send that you think are so fucking important, and choosing the ones I will answer. Don't pat yourself on the back if I choose yours. It's almost sure not to be a compliment. First question. John from Pennsylvania asks, what would and wouldn't you do with your own killdozer? So, John, thank you for the wonderfully violent daydreams this has sparked in me. It's been lovely. First off, I feel Marvin, the inventor of the killdozer, could use a bit more style. If you're going to have a killdozer, you best know how to fucking party. So, I would make a few additions, which would include a replenishable drug and alcohol dispenser, who the fuck cares about food and water at this point, built-in sex toys to ensure you can physically match the full body orgasm that is sure to come from this endeavor, my killdozer mixtape, to see what mine would include, check the website, and more explosives than I can name for more lovely outward destruction. Moving on, here's the plan. Starting in what could be any central city, I would proceed to the middle and work in an inward-outward spiral pattern to demolish as many structures as possible. At my ultimate moment of climax, watching blood rush into the streets, pass me the whiskey and a cigar, I'm heading out of the city to the center of the nearest power plant, dousing myself in gasoline, putting a brick on the gas pedal after finishing any leftover drugs, smiling as I hit the green button for the wired explosives, and die more satisfied than any woman I've ever met. So if there's anything I wouldn't do with my own killdozer, I wouldn't let it go to fucking waste. And I'd take you out too. So if you had to ask for advice on this, you don't fucking deserve one. Second question. Barry from Arizona. I want to know why people think it's okay to be making a bunch of noise, and yet they have built architecture that we have to look at whether we like it or not. I mean, I think I already have the answer, which is that people consider sound to be somehow personal, rather than vision, which is collective or some such. Well, Barry, have you ever thought that maybe they just want you to shut the fuck up? I mean, you just asked me a question and then told me the answer, so you obviously love making noise. I say fuck it, embrace it, be even louder, fuck personal space. The only way one can legitimize personal space is if one were able to take it for oneself with assertion and maintain it. The people who might think this noise is not okay obviously haven't achieved maintaining their personal space. So give them a fucking tissue and tell them to try harder not to listen. Third question, from Ass Lips, and I don't give a fuck. When I met Taco Bell and I ordered two grilled steak chalupas with nacho cheese substituted for sour cream, and they charged me 50 cents for the addition of nacho cheese, a charge usually associated with the additional food cost of adding an item that does not usually come on the product as is described on the menu, completely fucking negating and ignoring the fact that I took a fucking goddamn ingredient off the fucking thing and that should balance out the whole fucking food cost equation, part of the fucking goddamn deal? Should I raise a fuss about it to the cashier who most likely hates her goddamn fucking job and the fact that paying money for four walls and a ceiling to protect her and her family forces her to endlessly stand and take orders from stupid, fuck, greedy, fat fucking Americans and attempt to get my 50 cents per fucking chalupa, by the way, refunded as I deem any fair and admirable establishment would do? So, Ass Lips, if she hates her goddamn fucking job and money and Americans, she would rob the shit out of you if you worked there. And she would look a whole lot better doing it than you and your ugly fuck friends could ever look while ordering Taco Bell. So fuck it. Shoot the boss, burn the place down, take the money, and eat the shit out of some food while you relish in how the revolting fucking food you are eating is simply a metaphor for how sickening life is. I'm Dr. Sunshine. No thanks to you. Enjoy your mundane lives. Until next time, don't forget to send me questions. I'm not looking forward to it.
On May 1st, inconsiderate field reporters dropped in on the International Workers' Day demonstration known as May Day. Billed as a response to a call for a general strike, we were unable to find any generals or strikers since it was after 5 p.m. After tossing a few pathetic smoke bombs and goofing around in the streets, we got some interviews from a few nuts attending. There were some good responses about burning shit or whatever, but if you're looking for affirmation, submedia is just a few clicks away. This first guy, a self-styled capitalist, was screaming at the marchers and seemed like he meant what he was saying more than anyone at the demo, so I heard him out.
Hey, go ahead and boo me! I am proud to be a capitalist! I'm proud to be an American! You guys don't like America? Get the hell out!
You know what? What I appreciate capitalism is the fact that I can earn a living. I can follow my dream. I work very hard as a small business owner. And to be honest, I don't appreciate these people thinking I should have to give them my money on top of giving it to my family as well. I am proud to be an American.
Those cats don't really like money. What do you respond about that?
Like, I'm proud to have it. Money can do a lot of great things for our community. I volunteer for an animal rescue organization. My money, part of my money, I gladly give to them, but it's my choice. They're a bunch of socialists.
But they're not even as good as animals?
I wouldn't know. I've never met any of them, okay? I can't honestly say, but...
I also managed to get a brief interview with Officer Cortez, who was sent over to remind the children not to play in the road.
What's your name, officer?
My name's Cortez.
Cortez, thanks, officer.
You betcha.
I just want to know, what do you think about this big gathering here, all these crazy anarchist types?
I think it's a wonderful thing that we live in a country where people can protest and come out and do as they please, as long as it's within the rights and respecting other people.
But so you're not into, like, getting in the street and stuff like that, like has always happened historically? You're just not into
no,
that?
No, you just can't obstruct traffic.
Oh, I remember back in the 30s, early 1900s, you guys were shooting occupiers and strikers. You guys not, you're beyond that now or what? Okay, just checking.
An ABC News reporter also volunteered his opinions, letting me know with deep sincerity just how intimidating he found the march to be.
Okay, let me interview you. You the Fox News guy or
I'm
you with this
ABC
guy?
ABC 15.
It doesn't matter, you're all the same. What did you think of all this here?
It's nice to see this outpouring of, I guess, interest in the event. You know, for the media, when there's only so many people there, like very few numbers, it's not that big of a deal. And, you know, kind of shows that the protest is still alive, the whole Occupy event.
The Occupy is neat and everything, but what do you think of these scary anarchists here?
I'm very frightened of them. I don't even want to approach him. I'm fearing for my life.
This next well-intentioned chump was speaking on behalf of the marchers, saying that they were all proud to be Americans. So I decided to investigate a little further. I found out that this white guy had a really interesting take on what it means to be a Native American, and he had some truly indispensable insight on how capitalism could continue to work.
We're all proud to be Americans.
Oh, that's not true. Don't put words in my mouth, sir.
Well, I'm proud to be American.
Tell me why you're proud to be an American. Is it the genocide overseas or the economic disparity at home?
No, I'm proud of being American because I was born in America. Were you born here? You're a Native American.
That's really interesting. What do you think of the pre-colonized Native Americans maybe listening to that
speech? Oh, they got screwed.
They got screwed.
And we're getting screwed now. I'm with you guys. I've been marching with you the whole day.
Screwed. Can you define screwed for me? Because screwed for them meant genocide and conversion to a religion.
Yeah, we haven't got there yet.
Comparatively, I think you're doing all right. Where would you compare yourself to screwed?
Oh, I'm not. I haven't been screwed yet.
Oh, okay.
If anything, I screwed myself.
So are you out here for Mayday, like, just in case it gets bad for you? Or why are you out here?
No, I'm out here to see how the movement's going here in Scottsdale.
What movement?
The Occupy movement.
But what are they doing?
We've actually changed the political landscape. I mean, capitalism, there's ways that it can work, but it has to be eco-moral, and it has to be ego-moral. Yeah, all we have to do is redefine democracy itself, redefine capitalism itself. I mean, you can call it whatever. You can call it committalism. a mix of communism and capitalism.
I spent the rest of the day walking around looking forward to the success of the Occupy movement being that of Native American committalism. Next, I happened across an aspiring young anarchist who had just the most adorable little things to say. Don't get me wrong, I like this kid. So if you're out there listening, kid, keep saying ridiculous shit. Don't let him sophisticate you.
What do you think of anarchists and anarchism?
I personally am an anarchist, so, you know, I enjoy the theories of anarchy.
Like, do you have a favorite anarchist theorist or anything like that?
Yeah. Noam Chomsky, I've read a lot of him. He's a pretty chill old guy.
Yeah, he's not bad for one of the millionaire anarchists.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm completely against fucking capitalism and shit. The system needs to fucking die. I think the state is bullshit.
And on our way out, these two white-haired old ladies in a convertible told me about how splendid it is to live in a country where anarchists, like the last precious rascal, can say what they want.
Some of these people out here look like scary anarchists. What do you think of them?
I heard that.
I hope they're not anarchists. I'll tell you that. Yeah, I can't even ask. But we live in a free country where we can protest. How wonderful is this? How wonderful is this? If you lived in China, you couldn't.
Before we get started on this band interview, we want to make it clear that this is not a music show, this is an inconsiderate show. We don't want to feature your music, we want to feature how inconsiderate you are. If you're inconsiderate enough, we might take the collateral damage of featuring your music. That said, I sat down with this Canadian folk punk band, Snail Party, after one of their shows. And the first thing I wanted to ask them was, what the fuck is wrong with you?
So many things, don't even know where to start.
I don't know, we're all sick all the time, wake up, vomit.
Yeah.
My toenails are falling off.
Oh, we wrote a haiku about this. Drunk off my asshole, leaning over the toilet, wishing I was dead.
It's basically our reality.
I blame it on God.
The next thing I want to ask is, Canada?
You know, I was stoked on Canada until I came down here. I'm still riding a state's high. It's fucked. I don't know what it is.
You actually like it that much? You want to stay here?
Yeah, for anyone listening. I would very much like to get married to an American citizen.
Well, while we're waiting for those requests to pour in, this next question is for our listeners as well. So those listening, comment on our Facebook, the show's blog, or the email. And you tell me now, what do you hate most about anarchists, radicals, and or punks these days?
The fact that people fixate on things that are completely irrelevant and it causes divisions that are completely irrelevant. And just, like, perpetuates this really fucked up elitist division of, like, what it means to be an anarchist or a radical or, like, a PC fascist, per se. Like, I don't know. Like, I just feel like people don't focus on community building and they focus on, like, what it means to have their small little clique.
Yeah. Or, like, these fake little interactions between people, like, trying to be, like, I don't know, respectful or, like, politically correct, which can be really, really important, and, like, I mean, respect is really fucking important, but, like, they don't challenge each other, and there's no, like, attempt to actually move beyond, like, these conversations we keep having over and over and over again, like, for some reason, they're actually translating into action. That's what I mean when I say it's a clique, though, is that, like, a lot of times I feel like people base, like, their radicalism on presenting themselves in a certain way, but they're never actually there in cases where they need to be. Like, it's a lot about putting up a front and, like, trying to out-anarchist each other is a term I use a lot. Yeah, that's a really massive concern for me. Now we're all fucked. Yeah. But this is what we talked about before, is, like, people fucking cripple themselves with, like, the fucking laws that they enforce upon their own communities and, like, what they think is acceptable and what they think is, like, active participation in something like that. Like,
so more of, like, to just get away from it and not involve myself, really. But, I don't know, I definitely appreciate it when manners are used.
I shoot pennies at road signs. Is that what anarchy we do? Yeah, that's what anarchy is, right?
Yeah.
Jacking each other off and shooting pennies at things.
Look how good I am at security culture. Remove my battery right in front of you.
Yes. Nobody can see us, but we're all jacking each other off right now.
You guys are touring the U.S. from Canada on a short bus, so what's the craziest shit that's happened on tour so far?
Yeah. We were having a death race with some hippies and flipped the bus onto an electric fence.
A live electric fence, and our bus runs on propane, therefore the sparks could have caused us to die. I was on
lightning
the...
Lightning everywhere.
A TV nearly landed on Holly's head.
Yeah, but, like, then we realized after that, like, because, like, the driveway was so steep, like, when we were getting pulled out, that, like, if we hadn't flipped, we would have actually barreled down the driveway and probably killed a bunch of our friends. So really, like, my version of it is that, like, Satan totally saved our asses by flipping us.
Also,
yeah,
we won the race.
We won the race.
All right, I hate to do this to you, but I gotta ask. Folk punk? Seriously?
I'm fucking proud of it. I was talking earlier today about how I love folk punk because everyone can do it.
I see this.
We can all be shit together.
Someone described us as a noise band once.
Whoa, that actually could make sense.
No, a dusty noise band with, well, we have melodies.
I guess that's the answer to the folk punk question. Folk punk? Noise?
All right, that was about as embarrassing as I predicted. So let's see if you can redeem yourself with this next question. What's the most inconsiderate thing you've ever done or have done recently?
I broke a guy's jaw with PVC piping once.
Like I said, we're assholes. We're horrible people.
Yeah, we're terrible, awful human beings.
Probably being born. I feel like most of the worst ones have happened when I was blackout drunk, and therefore I don't remember them.
Once we played at Nautical Nellie's in Newfoundland, and there was this guy who was super happy, and he wanted to bang me really, really bad, but he was being super polite about it, so I let him on the whole time. He bought me so many, like, drinks, and we got, like, pretty drunk together, and then I dropped at the very last minute that I was a dyke, which isn't actually true. And then we ended up just talking about unicorns instead. So, like, we basically talked about unicorns, and it was, like, I felt so bad. This guy really, really thought that we were gonna have sex. And, like, he wasn't an asshole about it either. We ended up just talking about unicorns at the bar, and then we danced to funk. Snail party will fucking kill me.
Snail Party, go to Canada, ask that band member to marry you, or go to snailparty.bandcamp.com.
If there's anyone you can trust on not being cool, it's this nerd. We dragged Squee away from his D&D tournament to outline his resistance to cool.
Cool.
What does it mean to live in a world where you feel like you are driven to fucking pay someone to listen to your emotional shit and help you try to figure stuff out? What does it mean to feel powerless against forces in your social life which consistently offer the basic message that your baggage is practically insufferable? So the most considerate thing that you could do is keep your fucking mouth shut. What does it mean to be in conflict about the desire to respect other people's decisions and the sentiments of outrage felt towards the way in which deep desires for acceptance, affection, and sympathy are suppressed in favor of cool? Emo, as a rebellious strand of hardcore which recognized the failures of cool, became a fucking pop culture caricature similar to goth.
Cool
has been around for much longer. Since the 1500s. While the history might be a bit misleading, I'll quote from Wikipedia, because I'm fucking lazy. Sum and substance of cool is a self-conscious aplomb in overall behavior, which entails a set of specific behavioral characteristics that is firmly anchored in symbology, a set of discernible bodily movements, postures, facial expressions, and voice modulation that are acquired and take on strategic social value within the peer context. Cool was once an attitude fostered by rebels and underdogs, such as slaves, prisoners, bikers, and political dissidents, for whom open rebellion invited punishment. So cool hid defiance behind a wall of ironic detachment, distancing itself from the source of authority rather than directly confronting it. And that quote is already enough to see how cool is a method of flight as well as recuperation. A discipline for the yuppie, punk, gangster, anarchist, and socialite alike. If it were only that, it would already be worth resisting. Yet here we are, dancing on this rigid corpse, tipping our hats to such a powerful force of psychological suppression. Coolness might as well be a replacement for the term Foucault used, docile bodies. It is at its best to eliminate all temptations to feel strong emotion, and it is at its worst and most cowardly to freeze the somatic expression of emotion, to posture statuesque. In opposition to so-called spaz, geek, dork, or in more contemporary terms, anything too emo, cool inserts into our shared social existence its shards of separation and self-absorbency. It interrupts the movement of emotive circulation, it atomizes and fuels displaced outbursts of destruction. And when it finally melts down into a cathartic experience, the bonds which catharsis can produce quickly snap as the charade continues on. This is not the attitude of someone with a deep well of fulfillment who would readily embrace the opportunity to spill over their joy into the lives of others. It's the attitude of the individual trying to pretend like they're not shivering in their boots. Sure, it isn't all of us. The hippie wanted peace and love. They may have got the love right. But I definitely prefer the fiery fucking rage. Well, for those that resist cool, I'll offer something toasty. If you're not cool, well, then maybe you're fucking hot.
That would be cool.
For more from Squee, visit squee.anarchyplanet.com. Bringing us the final feature on this episode, Alex from the Albuquerque-based band Arroyo Deathmatch tells us a true story titled, I Don't Play That Victim Shit.
So, my mom had just gotten a new job and moved back to the town she had lived in for most of her life. Though it was a country away from where she was born, the bizarre little town of Los Alamos will probably always be home to her. She ended up living in a part of town she hadn't lived in before and looked forward to exploring the area. On her first day out at the park near her house, she noticed a man with an elderly dog. Something about the way the dog limped and seemed to be short of sight reminded her of her own dog, which had recently passed. She spoke briefly with this man about his dog and went on her way. The next day, she saw that same man in a different part of the neighborhood while she was doing a bit of trail running with her dog, Tonka. He sped up to catch up to my mother, and it's clear that his dog is really having a difficult time keeping pace with my mother and her young dog. So my mom makes a passing comment about the fact that he should slow his pace for his dog's sake and not run on such a steep trail. The next day, my mom's running the same trail at a different time of day, and she sees the same man behind her. He cuts across rough terrain, leaving the trail entirely so he can get in front of my mother. At this point, my mom notices he has a different and much younger dog with him. He smiles and says, "It's funny how we keep running into each other, isn't it?" My mom doesn't say anything at first. She asks him tentatively about his other dog. He says his dog had passed away in his sleep the night before. The way he smiled, the way he aggressively pursued her on the trail, kind of put my mother on edge. But when he had a new dog the next day, she knew it wasn't just a coincidence she had seen him every day since the move. He was going to do everything in his power to see her every day. And she knew right then that the guy had killed his own dog and gotten a younger dog to continue to have an excuse to run into my mother on her runs and hikes. Now, New Mexico has very few two-story houses, so living in one affords you a wider field of vision than in most places. The man who had begun to stalk my mother lived in a two-story house in the neighborhood. No matter when my mother would leave the house, he had the ideal vantage to observe her from. My mother was now aware she was being stalked, and that these encounters with this man were not accidental. She would see him in the park. She would see him on hiking trails. He appeared at the preschool where she worked in the parking lot, hours before the school would open, waiting for her. She told co-workers and hid inside until he left. This was the first time she considered involving the police. She thought that she didn't have enough evidence for the police to take her accusation seriously, so she decided the next time she saw that fucker, she was going to confront him. Of course, she sees him again on the trail. He goes out of his way once again to get in front of her and let her know that he's there. Now, my mom is a pretty small person. She's like 5'4", maybe 120 pounds. This man is much larger than her, and though he's elderly, she is deadly aware of the difference of their size. As he approaches her on the trail again, she starts screaming at him and running towards him. "This shit stops today," she screams. "I'm gathering documentation, old man. I know what you're doing, and you're not going to get away with it." At this point, he starts laughing and shaking his head. She runs up and takes a picture of him with her camera phone. This enrages him, and he starts screaming at her that she's a crazy woman. In the moment, she thought, "Perfect. That'll be my mission statement. Crazy. If this guy's going to act crazy and stalk her and call her crazy, then she was going to show him what crazy looked like." Her socialization crept back in, and she felt like she had lost control, that she had gone too far down the wrong road, so she called the police. The police said they'd look into it, and my mother began to really feel the effect this man was having on her life. She became paranoid of every activity. Letting her dog out in the yard would make her worry that he would kill her dog. Going to work wasn't just going to work anymore. It became drive around in circles to make sure you aren't being followed, and then eventually get to your destination. Seems kind of excessive, except that some days she actually was being followed. She saw him almost every day for a year and a half. She built a fence around her house so he couldn't see her as easily. She changed her locks. She changed jobs to try to prevent him from showing up at the preschool, but he followed her to her next job as well. He waited until my father was out of town and the younger volunteers had gone home before making his appearance at her new job. She drove straight to the police station from there and reported the incident. The police said they'd look into it and did nothing. They wouldn't help a woman who had been stalked for a year and a half and who had documentation of the stalking. She called them the next day to see if they had done anything, and the police apparently went to his house, but he did not answer the door, so they left. She decided then that if he were ever to put her in danger, she would take his life, and that she could not rely on anyone else to protect her. She told the police, "If he comes near me again, I'm going to kill the motherfucker," to which the policeman responded, "You do what you have to, ma'am." She sees him again, this time at the park where she first saw him. She's filled with dread upon seeing him again, but it's not as bad as the dread she feels every day living with this horrible person in her life. Something in her has changed, and she says to herself, "Today is the day this shit ends." He smiles and begins walking toward her. My mother jogs over to two men standing to the side. She points to her stalker and screams, "That man is a stalker. He has been stalking me for a year and a half, and I need you to call the police right now." The young man with the cell phone stares at her, his mouth open, and hesitates. My mom doesn't. "Don't you have a daughter, a mother, a sister, a grandmother? Call the police." So the guy with the cell phone calls the police, and my mother's stalker, realizing he could get caught in the act, flees to his car. My mom chases him, and as he tries to close the door to his car to drive away, she lunges into the car and forces the door open. She won't let him close the door and tries to drag him out of his car. He's screaming at this point, and my mom is beating on him, yelling, "Motherfucker, you're going down." When the police finally pull my mom off this guy, she's screaming, "I don't play that victim shit." As my mom retold me this story, she mused that it might not be over. It's possible that she didn't really scare him off and that he could have just gotten more cautious and better at what he did. This bothered me a bit, and I said, "Look, if you ever see that man again, please call me." She laughed and said, "You know, when your brother found out about this, he said the same thing. He told me to go on vacation for a weekend and that he'd solve it for her. But you know, son, you'll never get that call from me." I asked her why. She said, "Because that's the sort of thing that's best to do yourself." She got the files back a couple of days ago concerning the various police reports and incidences involving this whole debacle, and my mom is named as the aggressor by the police, and her stalker of nearly 2 years is the victim. At first she was shocked, but honestly, I think that suits my mom just fine.
All right, uglies, that does it for this month's episode of Inconsiderate. If there's something you hated, hopefully we did it on purpose or it made you want to contribute your own pathetic attempts at entertainment. Send contributions, questions, and death threats to inconsiderateaudio@yahoo.com, inconsiderateaudio.anarchyplanet.org, or hit us up on
Facebook.
And don't forget to drop a comment answering this episode's poll question: what do you hate most about anarchists, punks, and radicals these days? And send in your questions for advice from Sunshine for them to be included on the next show. Playing us out is the Mormon family band First Love, with a truly morbid anthemic endorsement for former presidential candidate Rick Santorum. Game on.
Game on. Join the fight. We finally got a man who will stand for what is right. Game on. Victory's in sight. We got a man who understands that God gave the Bill of Rights. Oh, there is hope for our nation again. Maybe the first time since we had Ronald Reagan, there will be justice for the unborn. Factories back on our shores where the Constitution rules our land. Yes, I believe Rick Santorum is our man. Game on, he's got the plan. Lower taxes, raise morale, put the power in our hands. Game on, change is at hand. Faithful to his wife and seven kids, he'll be loyal to our land. For there is hope for our nation again. Maybe the first time since we had Ronald Reagan, there will be justice for the unborn. Factories back on our shores where Constitution rules our land. Yes, I believe Rick Santorum is our man. Oh, it's crazy what's been slipping through our hands when we the people are still supposed to rule this land. Rick understands, so there is hope for our nation again. Maybe the first time justice for the unborn. Factories back on our shores where Constitution rules our land. Yes, I believe Rick Santorum is our man. Yes, I believe Rick Santorum is our man. Yes, we believe Rick Santorum is our man.